Welcome to BitterCast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 6, Axe and Grind. Alexis, what do you think about this title?
It's awkward and I don't really like it.
Oh, really? Yeah, it is a little awkward. It's the only one of the and something and somethings that it's not, I don't really feel like is a thing.
Yeah.
Axe to grind is a thing.
It is, yeah.
But there is an axe and there are a lot of coffee grounds in this episode.
Oh, maybe that's the reference they're making.
Could be.
Okay, I like
and,
that.
And, you know, definitely Kim, with the choices she's making, I think has an axe to grind against Howard. But again, that's axe to grind, not and.
Wheels and wheels to grind against various medians of the highway. Yes.
Directed by Giancarlo Esposito, our very own Gus.
Yeah, he pronounced it differently in the Insider podcast, and it's made me question my understanding of how that last name is pronounced.
Oh, his last name?
Yeah. Called him Esposito or something like that.
No, surely not.
Yeah.
Wild.
That's what threw me off.
I did a three-hour Better Call Saul stream last night with my friend Pete Peppers and Gil from One Take. My friends, and I did not have time to listen to the Breaking Bad Insider podcast, or Better Call Saul Insider podcast. So, I wouldn't know how to pronounce Giancarlo's last name.
I still don't know. I still don't know. It's good listening to him, though. Yeah, a lot to say.
I expected this to be the episode maybe where we'd see Walt and Jesse. I had that whole theory about, you know, the episode before Better Call Saul. I mean, this is the episode before Breaking Bad stuff comes back, but it didn't turn out that way.
No, they're holding out the explosive stuff, I suppose, for the next episode.
Oh, yeah, this is.
But we still got plenty of at least two what the fuck moments for me in this episode.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah. When there was something afoot and then not afoot. And Kim making the choice that she does at the end. Yeah.
That's a big episode. This is a really big Kim episode. And
it is.
I like this a lot better than the previous two, I think. Especially that cold open.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that more here in a minute. But like that cold open says a lot about Kim. And it's one of the few insights we really get into Kim.
Her childhood. For sure.
Yeah, lets me understand why she's making the decisions she's making. It was really strong. And then at the end, you know, having that cold open there really helps understand why she might pull this U-turn.
Yeah. She has a complicated relationship with legality, with just her interpersonal relationships. She's
a complicated lady. Her mom and how that's influencing her and all sorts of stuff. I think, you know, this is another setup episode, right? And
a little bit,
D-Day has not happened. We know a lot more about what D-Day probably is, which we can talk about here in a minute with this judge. But definitely still a setup episode. I know a lot of people are getting impatient. Me too. I want to see D-Day. I want to see Howard taken down, even if whether he deserves it or not. But I think this is going to be a lot better on binge rewatches
because
like that's the one thing I noticed doing my rewatch of Better Call Saul is everything just felt better when I was watching them back to back to back, when I didn't feel like I was waiting around for things to happen.
Right. Yeah. The slow burn is a lot slower when it's broken up by 6 days for sure.
Yeah.
7 days. That's how long a week is.
And I think it's there's something different about this season, too. I don't want to say, oh, well, you just, you know, got to have patience and everything. It's definitely different. I think in past seasons, they didn't really do this big lead up to a huge scam, right? What they did is they'd give us a scam that was set up and resolved in a single episode, pretty much. I mean, there were some that spanned like maybe two episodes. This has spanned six episodes. So like, and seven, if you want to count the finale of last season.
Right.
So I understand the impatience. I'm impatient too. I really can't wait to see next week. they got to give us something big, right? I mean, it's a mid-season finale.
I've heard there are going to be some good reveals and good stuff.
Yeah. God, I hope so. Because, boy, if they can't pay this off, I think people will be even angrier about it.
Come on. You got Lalo literally asking questions. What more could you want?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry for that. I'll show myself out.
It's okay. You can stay.
You ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's get into the recap.
All right.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
As we mentioned before, the teaser for this episode is young Kim getting caught shoplifting. Shame on you. Her mom comes to bail her out and then gives Kim a jewelry set she herself stole.
It's not a pair of earrings sitting in a glove compartment. And we start at the back wheel of the car, and we scan up to the back bumper, and then around the side, and then to the door handle, and then up through the open window, and then down to the glove box that has tissues in it. Yeah, I'm painting a picture a lot like the blue rose, or not blue rose, but blue flower for Nacho, where it would have taken 4 minutes to get to something that's like kind of inexplicable.
You're complaining again. That's what's happening.
That's exactly.
You're reverse complaining.
I'm opposite complaining because I think like that would be the temptation here.
Sure.
If you were going with other cold opening styles, but this is good. This is like, this says so much about Kim, and we actually
and her
have
mom,
a
too. God, what a character.
Yeah, she's great. I've really liked her, but she has been pretty inscrutable at times. Mm-hmm. Like, why is she making these choices? Especially when we see the flashback that we already saw of her in previous season.
Right.
Because that would make it seem like she would just be even more against these, you know, loose people who go around doing weird and bad things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I feel like, puts a point on her relationship with her mother influencing her way more than she even wants it to.
Yeah.
Because like her mom, so the setup for this whole scene is like Kim steals something. Mm-hmm. It's a pair of earrings, which we'll talk about in a second. But her mom comes in and acts like she's in trouble. And then when the store clerk or manager lets her off the hook, she's like, oh, good job, Kim. I didn't think you had it in you. That's mm-hmm. awesome for stealing.
Yeah. The impression that this scene left on me, there was a lot of stuff happening with the young actor. And my read on it was that a little bit she wanted to be caught.
Uh-huh.
And she wanted for justice to like actually happen. And I think she was actually kind of disappointed when her mom basically let her know that it was an act after yeah. they're by themselves.
Totally.
When she like jerks her hand out of Kim's hand.
It feels like a call for attention.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Call for parenting, probably.
Right.
Please God, parent me. Stop trying to be my cool older sister.
How far can I push this person before they actually do the right thing?
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, when you have a parent like this, I think we actually have a therapist who wrote in on this topic. Mm-hmm. And I talked about this last night on that stream a little bit. Like there's a couple ways that kids react to their parents. There's a lot of ways, but the ways that I'm seeing here that Kim's reacting to her parents is a little bit of rebellion, maybe. Mm-hmm. In the fact that she's stealing things, she could just be acting out, but assuming she's not, she can grow up with this parent who she views as like this terrible person. Right. Mm-hmm. And that pushes her to be the Kim that we know at the beginning of the series, always buttoned up and
right.
on the straight and narrow and, you know, very successful and whatever. But then like there's something inside of her that also remembers, hey, this is my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And has like a nostalgia for that almost. And
yeah.
So when she like sees
familiar,
Jimmy and who
right?
he is, yeah, she falls in with him because of the relationship she had with her mom and who her mom was.
It's like people who end up dating and marrying their parents. It's
yeah, exactly.
Just like that, yeah.
And also, I think the Kim we knew at the beginning of the series might be more like her mother than we realize. 'Cause that's the thing too, like, yeah, as you get older, you realize how much your parents did influence you, how mm-hmm. alike you are to them.
And you have no control over it.
Right.
It's terrible. Yeah.
All those traits you have that came from them so obviously. And then, you know, how hard do you fight against those? Can you fight against those, or are they just part of you?
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of see it was sort of always a part of her because she grew up with this mother who was like Jimmy.
Yeah.
So you could see why she'd be attracted to him. I'm starting to understand Kim a lot more.
Definitely.
And why she doubles down whenever Jimmy does something stupid or reckless
yeah.
or
right.
kind of betrays her and is an asshole sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think this cold open is very good. It does a lot of heavy lifting for the character. This is the kind of cold open I want to see more often. Unless ice cream cones with ants crawling across them.
With yodeling in the background, yeah.
Yeah. Not that it's bad, it's just doesn't do anything for me like this
sure.
does. So what about those earrings?
What about those earrings? Those iconic spike earrings.
Mm-hmm.
I love them. She still wears them. That's got to mean something.
All
right?
the time.
All
this
the time.
This entire series, mm-hmm. she's been wearing those earrings.
We've seen her fiddle with them several times.
Right.
Drawing our attention to it.
It's another really compelling part of this is that like she thinks of those earrings like she doesn't wear those earrings because she hates her mom.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
probably. Yeah.
She
or
wears them to remind her
in some way of her mother, whether that is negative or positive, we don't know, but they are a keepsake. Like
yeah.
They were mentioning this on the Insider podcast too. I don't have earrings from seventh grade or whatever.
No, God no. I don't know that I have anything from seventh grade.
I don't think I do either. Yeah. So there's something there. It's got to be something.
Yeah.
And it's just nice once again to see the origin of another of these just very iconic props.
Mm-hmm.
Like the little black book later on.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of those this season. They
have, yeah, which, you know, makes sense. This is their last chance to do so.
True.
So, yeah, they're going to be peppering that in.
Really starting to connect the dots between this show and Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to wonder if this shoplifting thing is not also a slight callback to Marie from Breaking Bad stealing, I think it was a necklace for Skylar for her baby shower, right?
Yeah. I think so. I think you're right.
Yeah. Or
sticky fingers.
And spoons and
sticky finger
all sorts
Marie.
Of things.
Yeah. Just random garbage.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you ready to go on to the first official scene?
Sure.
All right. We are going to Howard, who's getting ready at home. We get to see the inside of his house for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
He makes some doomed latte art, has an awkward conversation with his wife, and then meets with his PI.
Yeah, he starts off, actually, I don't know if you can call this a doghouse. It's a very fancy doghouse, but in like the guest house.
Yeah, it's like an annex sort of situation.
Across a carport.
Yes, he has to walk across the carport to make coffee.
Yep.
Ugh.
So clearly it's more on the rocks than we thought, this relationship.
Yeah, it seems less on the rocks and more on the floating into the ocean.
Yeah, it's on a melting glacier, like a sad polar bear.
It's out to sea, yeah.
Great. and I love seeing Howard, you know, making this effort, putting all that effort in that coffee and sitting in front of her and saying, that's for you. And expecting her to, like, pick it up and drink and have a moment with him, right?
He
just wants to be around her for a little bit.
Yeah.
And she dumps it in a to-go mug, leaves a huge mess on the counter, and then just leaves.
A little dribble, but it is kind of heartbreaking watching him wipe up that mess after she leaves.
Yeah.
It says so much in just like 10 seconds of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautifully efficient.
And his wife, I noticed, is actor named Sandrine Holt, who you probably would recognize from Mr. Robot or The Expanse or House of Cards or any of the other 15 shows she's been in the last 5 years, because she's really making the rounds. And I like her. I like her a lot.
Yeah, I feel like she did a really good job walking that line of cold but still familiar.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I noticed
about
this scene is that Howard makes her coffee, but he's drinking tea.
He is drinking tea. I also noticed that. Not coffee. Does our man have a bit of a caffeine sensitivity? And two, oh God, does he have a caffeine sensitivity?
Maybe. Yeah, with what we hear from the vet here in a few scenes, that could be dangerous.
That could be potentially dangerous in the next episode. We will see.
Yeah, it. So if it is dangerous, I think we're still going to get treated to, you know, whatever the plan on D-Day was. I don't think it's going to be like, oops, it's so dangerous that we accidentally killed Howard.
No.
Because like,
no, but it'll just be another little wrench in the plan.
Yeah.
Or some kind of ramp up to something else.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how that plays out. So after all the coffee awkwardness, he meets with his PI, and the big photo that they care about is Jimmy making a huge withdrawal from the bank.
Yeah, it's like 20 grand, I think, is what the PI says.
And they both think it's super suspicious. And I think they're supposed to think that it's definitely part of the plan. Like, they know, they have to know that Howard is following them.
Yeah, I mean, because everybody this season was talking about how, you know, Howard's going to have to know, right? And like, what is Howard going to have up his sleeve to combat Jimmy?
Right.
And I think that means Kim and Jimmy would also know, hey, he's going to be on to us. He's going to realize that we're messing with him.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do something that will play into that.
That messes with his watching us mess with him.
Yeah.
Yes.
yeah, use his own actions against him here. And it makes sense with, you know, the plot that I think we're going to get. I think I have a really good idea.
I think I do too.
About what D-Day
finally
is.
Yeah.
Maybe we can talk about it when we get to the scene with the vet.
Okay. Yeah, we can hold out until then. Is there anything else that we missed about this scene?
I don't think we haven't talked about yet?
All right.
No. I mean, Howard just warns his wife, hey, if you see some weird stuff,
yeah,
I don't know what it is, but if it's weird, it's probably this thing I'm dealing with, and I will put an end to this,
yeah,
whatever it takes. I just don't know. I don't know if Howard's equipped to do that.
He's not shifty enough, probably, yeah, to deal with it the way that it ought to be dealt with, mm-hmm, but I'm sure he could deal with it in some boring legal way.
Maybe.
I don't know. Depends. Before we leave, I would like to also say that kitchen, super pretty.
Oh, yeah.
With all the light coming in.
The natural colors.
Yeah. The water over the stove thing. The faucet over the stove. So you can just fill your pasta water instead of having to carry a big-ass pot of water over to the stove. Love it. Jealous.
Yeah, him and Chuck. Well, Chuck had a nice house. Until he
ripped everything out of it. Surely he didn't rip out the plumbing. No reason to rip out the plumbing.
No.
But you can't exactly cook.
Nope.
A big old pot of pasta. That's fair. All right. Let's do it. Let's go to the vet's office.
Okay.
Where Kim and Jimmy are testing some caffeine drops on Jimmy, the guinea pig.
His skin's itchy because of it.
Sure.
There's a lot going on in this scene.
There is.
Both, you know, character-wise and also plot-wise and connections to Breaking Bad, that kind of stuff. So plot-wise, they're here to get this chemical that they can. I guess it's a topical, right?
It looks
so
like it.
Jimmy says, hey, my skin itches where you put that stuff on me.
Yeah.
So we know probably how it's going to be delivered to Howard. I assume to Howard. I don't know.
I'm assuming to Howard, too. That seems to be where that... Who else would they need to make their eyes super dilated and make them twitchy? Like, it's got to be Howard, right? They've already framed him for coke.
But that's, like, part one of the plan. Part two of the plan, I think this is, like, a two-stage, potentially three-stage. Maybe there's a stage we don't even see yet. But the second stage of this, I think, is to get the pictures of this judge that we'll see later in the episode, the fake judge,
right,
where he's delivering a bribe to this guy into Howard's hands somehow. And it's actually like a three-phase thing. And I don't know if this meeting with Sandpiper, the mediation call, is going to be like a whole phase, or if he's just like listening in to hear the plan go off.
Because
I talked about that when he was in the locker room at the gym at the country club, and how, like, you know, he kind of got trapped in there, but also I think like standing there while Howard pulled this bag of cocaine out of his locker was probably a bit of a thrill for him.
Yeah. Later in the episode, he mentions that he'll record the whole thing.
Yeah. So Kim can hear it and get the same thrill. Yeah.
So there's definitely an element of that.
Yeah. So I think the plan is, you know, get him to think that Jimmy is bribing the judge on the Sandpiper thing and call him out. Like, Howard calls him out in the middle, like, Judge, I have pictures of you taking a bribe on this.
Judge says, what the hell are you talking about? It makes Howard look completely unhinged.
Yeah. And then Cliff will see his eyes. He'll be all jittery. It'll be pretty good. I just hope there's some really good dialogue in there.
Yeah, I bet there will be.
From a connecting the dots on Breaking Bad perspective, we got this little black book, which is encoded. Kind of symbols and whatever.
Wingdings, yep.
Yeah, it's the same one we saw in the opening of the season, right? That montage of the FBI or whoever clearing out Jimmy's house.
Saul's house, yeah. Saul Goodman's house.
And inside the book, which is a little Easter egg itself, you get the best quality vacuum card, which we know is the card, the number that you call for the disappearer.
Yep. That plus a whole lot of money equals new identity.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm curious if the vacuum stuff will come into play at the end of this like season, at the end of the Better Call Saul timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Gene stuff, not the Breaking Bad stuff. If maybe someone uses it between then and now. I'm trying to remember when Saul used it for Jesse. For Walt. Did that seem like the first time he used it, or did that seem like he had used it before and he kind of knew that it would work?
I would have to go back and watch that scene to tell you that too. For sure. I'm really looking forward to my rewatch, by the way, the one I mentioned in the last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Yeah. I really like that Kim is there with him when he is seeing this card for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there will be any broader implications for that.
That's what I'm wondering.
In the future, yeah.
Yeah. Like, maybe she knows about it. Maybe, you know, that's what the call that we hear about in Breaking Bad is going to be about. Who knows?
There's a moment that Kim has in this scene. It's toward the end of the scene where Jimmy is eyeballing that little black book. Like, he so clearly wants to get his mitts on it because it's mm-hmm. the keys to the kingdom, as he says.
Yeah.
While at the same time, Kim has her back to him and she is looking at the vet's gratitude wall, right?
Yeah, with all the pictures of the pets on it.
Yeah. And she, has she not received at least some letters of gratitude already for her pro bono stuff?
That sounds familiar. I can't quite remember.
Yeah. But that's, it seems like she is thinking about that in the back of her mind.
Yeah.
As this other shady thing is happening behind her. So that was a nice contrast.
I think him saying, the vet saying, like, I'm getting out of this,
mm-hmm.
Cause it's about the animals, you know, it's not about this other stuff that I'm doing.
Right.
I think that triggers Kim to think about why she's doing the things that she's doing.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good setup in this episode because she's going to be put to a choice at the end of the episode. And she doesn't choose the one that you might think she would choose after this scene.
Yeah.
Because she's looking at all those pictures thinking she's not seeing the faces of pets. She's seeing the faces of all the PD cases.
Right.
And all those people she could help.
Exactly.
So I understand why she identifies with it and why Jimmy thinks that's insane. You're just giving up a revenue stream. It's mm-hmm. it practically runs itself. It's yeah. So I don't know. That was the character part of this scene that I really liked.
Yeah, I liked it too. Next, we're with Kim again, making a very reasonable argument for her client in court, I think, anyway. Mm-hmm. Cliff shows up to ask her about her relationship with Howard and invite her to a very important luncheon.
Yeah. Cliff drinking really gross coffee here.
Ed Begley drinking really gross coffee and totally selling how gross it is. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Yes.
I don't know. I definitely thought that Kim's defense here was pretty strong.
I did too. It seems like bullshit. Seems a little bit mm-hmm. like bullshit. Yeah. Okay, maybe he had some stuff, but that's not how the law works.
Right.
That's not how cops are supposed to work.
You can't just bust in people's doors and say, where are the drugs?
Exactly. Exactly. The dangler. They call it a dangler, which is friggin' hilarious to me. What is the actual name for that thing? I
don't actually know.
That's the problem. I heard that word. I thought to myself, no. But I couldn't come up with, what have I called it?
This is an air freshener, right? I would call that an air freshener,
okay,
but like,
sure.
If she's including a larger subsection of like hanging dice and
yeah, right,
hula girls and windows and all the you know traditional bullshit you think of, then probably I would call them something else. Danglers make sense,
but it's just a very funny word,
yeah,
to hear in a courtroom. I gotta say, especially out of her mouth. Mm-hmm. Danglers. Mm. But it is the same team as, obviously, the same team as the cab from, was it the very last Gene flashback episode?
Yes.
Okay. I believe so. The most recent one that we saw in last season. Yeah. The cabbie had that in his window, and Gene saw it and said, oh shit, somebody from where I'm from.
Yeah, Albuquerque Isotopes.
And he decided to take stuff into his own hands afterward.
Yep, and we still haven't seen the resolution.
We haven't.
I assume we won't see that until closer to the end of the show.
Maybe the end?
Maybe. Probably.
That'd be a cool end cap.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've already said that like six times, but it bears repeating. It'd be a cool end cap. So we follow Kim as she gets an eyeful of Jimmy's new office, and she walks in on a suitably weird photo shoot in the back.
Yeah.
She really likes what Francesca's done with the place.
I do too. Looks classy.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Well, I will say Saul's office looks a little bit like the room from the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Mm, yeah.
Like just put a big four-post bed in there and some kind of alien thing.
Some kind of alien thing for sure.
An old man.
Maybe some art on the walls. Desperately need some art on the walls. It will be a giant con. I know it'll be a giant constitution at some point, but right now it's just big gray walls. It's a little oppressive.
Yeah, I do wonder why exactly it changes. Like, I think you can see the seeds of it here because all of Francesca's hard work is unappreciated. Let's say
unappreciated. Let's say
yeah. And I think she, you can see, boy, talk about axe and grind. They're really going to grind Francesca down to nub.
Into the dirt. Oh, this poor woman. She's such a light. She's such a sunflower early on.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love how our very last moment with her in this episode is completely new Francesca.
Yeah.
every single second of it. We'll get to that scene, but oh, it's wonderful. I love it.
Yep. I love the setup for what's coming later here where she says, oh, I have a couple of water features coming for Serenity. Oh, it will be anything but.
Water features.
And these mustaches that they're picking out.
Oh, my God. Yes. These butterfly pinned to the wall mustaches.
You got Fu Manchus.
What about that one that was like, it had literally been on a curling rod. It was like a spiral on both sides. What were you thinking?
How is that in any way close to this?
Did you buy all of these for this? Why did you buy such a variety? Yeah.
I assume he just told the makeup artist, hey, I need mustaches. Bring me 25 different mustaches.
Bring me all the mustaches from your prop department.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. And of course, Kim just immediately picks the right one because she's Kim. She knows everything.
And she talks about D-Day here, which sounds huge.
That's D-Day. And there's an explosion sticky note under D-Day on the on the board later on with the nuclear symbol and everything.
I feel like they're trying to get Howard to go nuclear.
I think so, yeah.
Like they did with Chuck.
Yeah. Trying to make him show his ass.
Mm-hmm.
Except he's showing his fake ass. It's weird. Chuck was showing his real ass. Howard's going to be showing the ass that they want him to show.
The ass they made for him.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. The ass that Jimmy built. Kim and Jimmy built.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh, the other thing I love about this. Is it this scene where... Oh, it's the one where Francesca's making the phone call. Is that right now?
No, that's later on.
Okay.
Yeah, we will come back to pretty soon. Pretty soon. But not yet. First, we have to chop some firewood with one of Ziegler's old guys.
Oh, yeah.
And Lalo will come calling.
Yeah, what'd you think about Lalo showing up in this episode?
I love anytime Lalo shows up. He's become this, like, almost bigger than life, spooky specter figure. Just by dint of being gone for like two episodes. I love the shot of him coming in through the woods where there's nothing and then suddenly there's a shady figure. It just, it feels so right and so creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of scary a little bit, even though this man has an axe.
Yeah, I mean, he is like some kind of supernatural force at times. Like, I just remember that scene in the Travel Wire or whatever it is, mm-hmm. where he crawls up into the ceiling somehow. I don't even know how he got in the ceiling, A, at all, but B, as fast as he did.
Yeah.
And then he just, you know, drops down.
He's nimble.
Yeah.
Nimble as fuck. Crazy.
And I'm actually kind of surprised that anybody could even get the drop on Lalo. Like, I know this guy knows his barn pretty well, his workshop. Mm-hmm. Impressive workshop, by the way. I love that thing.
Yeah. Probably pretty cold in the winter, but stocked.
Yeah.
Big and stocked.
Yeah, he gets the drop on Lalo, which was surprising.
He does. Not that it's Lalo, so that doesn't really matter for long.
Yeah.
And he loses his foot. He loses his goddamn foot for his efforts. I did not realize how serious that injury was until my second watch, and I saw there's literally a foot off.
Yes. It's pretty grisly. Don't know that we've seen anything quite like that in this show before.
Other than Michael Mando shooting himself in the head, sure.
Yeah, but there's something about this, just like the foot sitting there at a completely impossible angle and two stumps showing and just like, I don't know, maybe I'm desensitized to headshots, but like this foot thing.
It's rough.
Really squicked me out.
It's, oh, you got squicked.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Yeah.
It's squicky. Horrible. It's pretty gross. And the parting shot from this scene is the silhouette of Lalo's legs with that axe hanging down and blood dripping off the axe. It is so metal. It is so hardcore. I love it. I hate that I am so attracted to a person who is so obviously terrible.
Yeah.
But he sells it, man.
He does.
His hair is looking better in this episode, too. More of the classic Lalo slick back on top.
It's because he, I don't know, had time for a shower or something.
Sure.
The other thing I like about the scene is they skip the part where he goes and tracks down the company.
Yeah, I was impressed. I was glad because that definitely would have, oh my God, that would have made things feel like they were dragging on so much more. So now I think that they are just going to skip forward to. They're not going to, like, I don't think they're going to bother showing us a scene of him, like, torturing a guy for information. I'm pretty sure he's just going to be on his way to the next step.
Yeah, which is probably
the
laundry.
Step in the next scene.
Right, we know, the guys were transported, I think, in a laundry van. They might know that, hey, it was a laundry. Hey, it's an underground thing that they were building.
Yeah.
So, you know, he might be able to follow Gus to the laundry or something and know, okay, that's where, it doesn't look like that's where it's happening, but that's where it's happening, and then start snooping around the laundry.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if that is going to pop off in the next episode or if that will be in the second chunk of the season.
I almost think it has to. I kind of think the last six episodes should be about Jimmy and Kim.
Yeah.
And leaving them wherever they're going to be left, because that's final, right? Like, we don't get any more about them in Breaking Bad at all.
I was going to say, Gus's story continues. So all we really need to know kind of is where Lalo's story is going to end.
Yeah. And I'm not like super invested because I know Lalo doesn't show back up. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't need to like be blown away by the ending of that, but I do need it to be dealt with enough or dealt with it efficiently enough that we can spend a lot of time on Jimmy and Kim, because I think that's where my heart is. That's where I really want to see a lot of work in the final six episodes.
That's where, in terms of emotional investment, now that we don't have Nacho anymore, I also am a little less invested in the cartel side of the storyline.
Yeah.
Even with Mike and him being adorable with his family, all that stuff. I'm here for that still, but definitely I need to see the resolution.
I mean, there's nobody else to root for, right? We know Gus survives. Yeah. We know Mike survives. Mm-hmm. There's no possible way any of the people on Gus's operation can have any harm come to them.
Right.
Victor survives. Tyrus survives. Like, everybody is in Breaking Bad.
They're basically bulletproof.
The only person here who can come to an end is Lalo. I don't want this to be just like, a footnote after Nacho's death, but it's sort of how it feels. Because that was the thing. Like, the stakes were there with Nacho. I don't feel those stakes with Lalo. because he's the bad guy.
It's true. It is true. But it will be interesting still to see how the Super Lab got from the state it's in right now to being like shiny and finished basically by Breaking Bad.
Yeah, we'll see. I think there are like 3 years between now and Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I guess that's plenty of time.
The other thing, I guess, is Lalo could re-intersect. And we were talking about this a little bit on the Pete Peppers stream I did last night. Mm-hmm. He could re-intersect with Kim and Jimmy. Because potentially Jimmy finds out that Lalo's alive.
Right.
And that's kind of the last he knows of him. Mm-hmm. Which would lead to that statement of Breaking Bad. Like, hey, did Lalo send you or whatever? Tell Lalo it wasn't me, whatever. So he could intersect with Kim again, because we know Mike has guys on Kim,
right?
And Lalo knows Kim, mm-hmm. and Lalo thinks Jimmy was involved in whatever happened in the desert, and he was.
Yep.
So he could come back to Jimmy, but the path he seems to be on is straight to the Super Lab.
Gus, yeah. It seems like he is really just focused on Gus at this point.
Yeah.
I think Jimmy's fairly safe from him.
Yeah, we'll see.
We will see. Dear God. So after all this shit in Germany, we go back to Jimmy's office where Francesca is freaking out because Jimmy's making her do something just a little bit shady. Nothing compared to stuff in the future, but
right, getting all the money out of his wall, shredding all his documents.
Yes.
Yeah. And she is just gonna get ground down. You see the guy put a cigarette out on the couch.
Yes.
You see the water feature. And I love it because on second watch, I noticed when she runs into Saul's office and she's like, hey, I got to talk to you. You can see the guy. He's like passing papers, just sign these. And the guy's like looking over at the water feature and he's all antsy, like he's got to go to the bathroom.
Oh, amazing. Didn't even notice that he was antsy. I did notice that he was very clearly drunk.
Oh, is he? Okay.
I think bro came straight from the bar.
Okay.
The office. And he's like, we'll get you back to the rusty bucket in no time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really funny stuff here, like having a sidebar in the law library, which is just
the exit
to the alley by the dumpster where, did you see the toilet that used to be in the office there?
Yeah. What a waste of a good toilet.
Right.
Shine that thing up. It'll still take poop. It'll take your poops and your peeps.
Sure.
Yeah.
Dude, what was the season one thing with the squatty potty? Was that? It wasn't a squatty potty. It was this horrible thing, like Mr. Pooper or something. Do you not remember season one where this like weird pervert guy called him up to do some law for him and had this toilet that like spoke to you when you used it and reassured you that you were
a
good boy.
I'm having a stroke right now. I don't remember this at all.
Oh God, people will remember this. It was scarring.
Clearly. Maybe that's why I don't remember. Maybe I blocked it from my mind.
Yeah.
Because it was so upsetting. Francesca's whole demeanor while she's making this phone call is so adorably and sadly uncomfortable. She's so clearly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I have so much sympathy for her in this part of the scene.
Yeah, and yet she sticks with it.
She does, because the money's good. It's the same reason everybody's sticking with Jimmy, basically.
And he's probably going to boil her like a frog, I assume. Yeah. Like, each request will get more and more outlandish and illegal until she gets where she is.
Yeah, maybe she just demands a bonus every time.
Yeah. The other thing I noticed, talking about the demeanors of characters, Saul has never been more Saul than this scene. This is the Saul that you see in Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
From the look, I mean, he's got the classic haircut, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when I see him, I see Saul Goodman from Breaking Bad.
Absolutely.
The haircut, the attitude, the loafers, all of it. The drawer full of cell phones is now a thing.
Yep.
Burner phones.
We have never been closer to Saul. I mean, at least in the way that he's speaking to Francesca in this scene, he is Saul Goodman.
Yeah.
That's Saul Goodman.
Convincing people to do things that they don't really want to do.
And being a little bit shitty about it because they're on his time.
It was great. It was amazing to see just Bob Odenkirk slip right back into that character.
Yeah. It's like putting on a bright suit.
And I couldn't really tell you, like, okay, where does the difference lie between the Saul I've been seeing that hasn't been quite Saul Goodman from Breaking Bad and that guy? I don't know what it is, but when he turns it on, it's like, yeah, slipping into an old pair of loafers.
Sure is. The Bluetooth earpiece and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We have never been closer to Breaking Bad than we are in that moment.
This is true.
Ah, I didn't get to make my... when they come back in, someone's adding extra water to the water feature joke. To be fair, it wasn't very good.
Refilling
the water feature with his own brand, with his own brew.
Well, he says stop, and then he turns around. He's like, wait, no, don't stop. Finish
Continue.
What you're doing. Yeah.
Yes. Disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and yes, Francesca's reaction to him telling her to clean up the piss is... is straight up Breaking Bad Francesca. Clean it up yourself.
Yeah.
Do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Slam. Yep. So sad. In the next scene, we are following Mike to the Super Lab surveillance room where Tyrus questions his manpower priorities.
Yeah.
Dude wants to protect his family. Of course he does.
I get it too. Yeah, I also get Tyrus's point of view here, because they're trying to catch Lalo, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the point is not to keep people safe. The point is to find Lalo.
It is.
So they can kill him. And if Mike takes the guys off his house, I mean, they're far more likely to go to Mike's house, Lalo is, than to go to his family's house. He doesn't even really know who Mike is, let alone where his family might live.
Of course.
So I get what he's saying. At the same time, Mike is Mike, and he's going to keep his family safe at all costs.
I think we're already at that point. It's all he cares about.
Yeah.
Especially now that he's lost Nacho. Mm-hmm. He has his family. That's it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we want to point out about this scene? Other than just how adorable it is that they're like stargazing from a distance. With each other.
Oh, yeah. That part of it, I like
it. It's very sweet.
It is. And I could see why, you know, some people might be impatient with this scene because it doesn't really add much of anything to Mike. We know he cares about his family.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a nice little quiet moment before presumably things are going to really pop off next episode for Mike.
Even in the next scene, we are immediately, or not immediately, but in the second part of the next scene, things are super tense.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're right. It's nice to have a little breather, a little Mike time. I like Mike. I like him as a character. He's, you know, morally gray, just like everybody basically on this show, but he seems to have a good heart, at least, for what that counts, whatever that counts for.
And I like that they're stargazing and he's viewing them through binoculars. Like, they are the stars to him. And Kaylee is his gas giant.
Pop.
That's not very nice.
Not that kind of gas.
Yeah, it's pretty good. He's telling him he's in Chattanooga, which I don't think he's on the state line between Tennessee and New Mexico here, but I could be wrong.
Amazing. The country shrank so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do this. Let's do this final scene. We are cutting to Kim and Jimmy finalizing their plans and sharing a drink at, quote-unquote, Omaha Beach. Next morning, Jimmy goes to pick up another bottle of Zafiro to celebrate, but discovers their judge is looking a little different these days and calls Kim in a tizzy.
Boy, there's a lot to talk about here.
Yeah.
First and foremost, the most important thing that happens in these scenes is why the hell are two extremely busy lawyers doing their own dishes by hand. The fuck? Especially when you see that he is doing the dishes not a foot from a dishwasher. You don't have time for this. You're planning D-Day.
Yeah, it is. Why? I'm with you. Why? Are you trying to have a moment of domesticity before everything explodes?
Winston Churchill was doing his own fucking dishes. I don't know that much about the war, but Probably not.
Probably not. Doesn't strike me as a dishwashing kind of man.
Anyway, yeah, that was my big bugaboo in this scene.
I like hearing how the bottle stopper for Zaffiro is sharp.
Yeah, when he's trying to buy a bottle. Before we get there, they talk about Omaha Beach.
Yes.
And that turns out to be HHM.
Mm-hmm. They go for a drink at Omaha Beach.
Omaha Beach being, I think, where they landed on D-Day, one of the places they landed on D-Day. Yeah. Things didn't exactly go to plan with that whole operation, but they got the job done. So I think that is kind of a foreshadowing of what's going to happen with their plan for Howard. It's not going to go quite to plan, but they will get the job done.
It's going
to
work well enough.
Yeah. And then they might have to suffer some wrath from Howard in the next chunk of episodes before we finish this series, but who knows?
How ballsy of them to just go to the HHM building at night, just like, you know, there's cameras everywhere probably, and just have a drink right in the next to the parking lot of the man they're trying to fuck over. Oof.
Yeah, it feels a little like running a victory lap before you've actually finished.
Yeah.
Like, you know those videos where you see the guy on the bike mm-hmm. approaching the finish line of a huge biathlon or something and throwing his hands up and like half pedaling, and then somebody zooms past him and beats
yes.
him?
Yes. Yep.
That's what they're risking here. I'm
right there with you. That was the exact feeling I had when I saw that this was Omaha Beach.
Yeah.
Wow. You ballsy fuckers.
Yeah. And they're setting out the beach blanket, right, to have their little party on. It's ridiculous. Here's the thing that I didn't think about the first time through, and it was brought up in the stream last night. How is it that Howard has a PI following them full time mm-hmm. and doesn't catch them here and doesn't catch them taking the fake photos of the judge and Jimmy together outside his office?
Those are good questions. Maybe they...
Because he did catch him at the bank.
Yeah. That leads me to think, I mean, one, that they absolutely know that they're being followed. And two, they know exactly what the car looks like, so they know when he is and isn't around.
Okay, could be.
I have
heard theories that they've actually hired this PI to get hired by Howard, but I have no idea how they could arrange that. It seems way easier to just arrange switching the envelopes.
Right.
Or getting these pictures into Howard's hands some other way.
That is a big question mark for me. How exactly is he even going to get these pictures? Especially now that we know they're going to have to make new pictures, probably.
Yeah, I assume that's what Kim is turning around to go do.
In the teaser for the next episode, they do have a little bit of frantic reshooting happening.
Oh,
so
my
spoilers. Spoil that a little bit for you. Huh? Sorry. Everybody else watched them, too.
I assumed it was true.
Yeah, I mean, they have to fix it. Otherwise, their plan's going down the pooper. That's not good.
I didn't want to get too far ahead with the Zaffiro stuff. So we find out, you know, with the Francesca stuff, that his plan is to call into the mediation call.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like I said, the judge is going to be there, and Howard's going to have these photos of him taking a bribe, and he's going to make a big scene, and he'll be wrong, and he'll look crazy, and he will literally look crazy with his eyes dilated and
skin sweating
and sweating and shaking and Howard's gonna look like a madman to Cliff again
if they can get the drug to him.
And all the clients are gonna hear this. I mean, that's the big thing is like, it's one thing to say, okay, Cliff is gonna push these clients to settle sooner, but they seemed pretty against that idea, right? And Howard was trying to talk them. Or no, they seem pretty with it, I guess. Some of them.
Some of them were like, I'm going to die soon. And Howard was trying to get them to hold out. Yeah.
But if they think, oh, our lawyer is a coked up madman and he's accusing judges and he's like, sounds all crazy, then yeah, they probably will push to just get this thing done.
Yeah. Could not possibly throw more doubt on the whole situation.
Yeah.
Than like this.
It's turning everybody against Howard and against the lawsuit at that point.
Yep.
So the other thing, I felt like when Jimmy's in this liquor store that this was a huge coincidence that he runs into this guy, and they lampshade it by saying, well, it's better that I saw him than us showing up with these pictures that don't make sense.
Yeah. Did that bother you?
It bothered me a little bit.
I know that
I think his office is close to the courthouse, and maybe this liquor store is close to his office, and so mm-hmm. it's close to the courthouse, and this judge just comes by for his morning bottle. I don't know. Maybe he's buying a gift for another lawyer.
Maybe. Yeah, it seems like it's a slim bottle, like it's wine or something.
But it seemed like a big coincidence to me.
Yeah, I know that you in particular have a big bugaboo when it comes to the plot being driven by the plot as opposed to character action.
Yeah.
And this did very much feel like that I'll give them a pass because they just don't do this very often at
sure.
all.
Sure.
These things that just happen by coincidence mm-hmm. and throw a spanner into the works.
Yeah,
but it is weird.
When you tally it up though with the idea that like the PI probably should have seen them taking these fake photos and camping out on Omaha Beach,
mm-hmm.
I start to go like, maybe this is a little creakier than they meant it to be. But I don't have all the information yet either. I don't know if this PI is working with Jim and Kimmy, Jimmy and Kim, or what the real situation is there. So I'm willing to give them, a pass for the week and see what happens.
I do. I really like the idea of them somehow having been able to orchestrate Howard hiring this PI specifically.
Yeah.
Might need them to show a little bit of that, like how the hell that happened, but it's a good theory. I like it. Picasso.
And then the very last part of this is when Kim decides to miss her meeting to make this scheme work. She is choosing the scam over her career.
She is, in a big way. And then she's going to have to explain that to Cliff.
Uh-huh.
But I guess not before shit goes down. So it doesn't matter. I don't know.
Well, I mean, she's definitely made a choice.
Yeah.
She does not care if she tanks the deal to become like the biggest public defender in all of Albuquerque,
right?
Or New Mexico, or however large the area is.
She's choosing Jimmy and the money over that. I'm sure in the back of her mind, she is thinking that with the money, she can still salvage the situation. Maybe she won't have the backing of this big group, but she'll still be able to scramble and put something together herself.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Debatable, maybe, depending on what happens in the next 7 hours of television, but
who knows? We'll see.
I sure as hell don't.
But I like this when paired with the opening scene.
Yeah.
Of her as a kid, because it sheds a lot of light on who she is.
It's a nice bookend. Oh, all about Kim. It's all about Kim at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we know who
Kim.
Saul becomes, who Jimmy becomes.
Oh my God, I keep seeing memes that are like, I'm more worried about Kim Wexler than I am about my own friends and family.
Sure.
Same.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, I'm feeling it. But that is the last bit of the scene. She is making a huge, messy U-turn into a huge, messy situation that she's going to try to fix.
I can't wait to see what happens next.
Oh, me either.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, let's get to some feedback. We have quite a bit of it.
Let's do it.
Again, apologies to people who I did not read their emails because, like I said, we got a lot. If you'd like to send emails, you can do so at bcs@baldmove.com. It stands for Better Call Saul, not Bacon Canada Switch.
Or Beneath Ceaseless Skies.
Definitely not that.
Nope.
First up is Julie says, and these are going to be some things from last week before we get to the meat of this week's discussion. Julie says, there seems to be a discussion about whether or not Lalo makes it out of Better Call Saul, but in my head, he has to die. And I had a lot of people write in and talk about this because I said, like, I thought I was in the minority on this, but yeah, Lalo probably dies. She says, it's been a minute since I did a rewatch of Breaking Bad, but I'm nearly certain that in Gus's soliloquy to Hector before they both get blown the fuck up, Gus says something to the effect of, your whole family is dead. Mm. Yeah, like you're the last of your line, last of the Salamanca, something like that.
Yeah.
Which I take to include Lalo Salamanca. And with Gus being Gus, of course, Jimmy wouldn't know that when he's in the desert with Walt and Jesse because Mike did his Mike thing and no one knows that Lalo is buried in the super lab, probably. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Like, if Gus believes that the Salamancas are gone,
then
I believe
gone.
The Salamancas are gone.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a man who crosses his I's and dots his T's.
Yeah, so it's pretty sure that Lalo is dead. All right, Matt E. says, one of the puzzle pieces we do have as Breaking Bad viewers is, at some point, Hector ends up living with Tuco on some farm, think in Mexico, while obviously ending up back at Casa Tranquila, thinking himself alone. We also know that Mike, and thus presumably Gus, don't know about the Disappearer. This may be answered by the end of BCS 606. It was not. 607 maybe. But it's possible that Lalo or Kim, for that matter, might be disappeared during Breaking Bad. I don't know if Tuco is confirmed to be returning, but we still have those several huge threads left hanging on top of the Gene stuff. Those are some of the dots we need to connect to Breaking Bad. They still have plenty of time on that. I assume if we see a Tuco, it'll probably be right at the very end. I don't think there's much for Tuco to do.
No, because past a certain point, he is so high on his own supply that he's incoherent, basically.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful contrast seeing Tuco in the earlier season of Better Call Saul versus where he is in Breaking Bad. Is a completely different person.
Yeah. And you know, all they need to do with Tuco is show a shot of him getting out of jail and boom, yeah. Like Breaking Bad is set up, right? This is how he got in back into the meth business. No. This is how he set up in Albuquerque with the thing and how he got Hector out to the farm or whatever. I don't really need all that.
Nah.
All right. Scott E. Also thinks Lalo's dead for similar reasons as above and then says, I agree with the idea that Lalo is buried under the super lab, though there's a bit of a plot hole there because the DEA would have surely found human remains under the burned out super lab in Breaking Bad. They examined that thing thoroughly inside and out, and they clearly would have sonared the floor and found a skeleton. But that I'll allow the Villa Gang. You might be right. I don't remember how that all goes down exactly. I know the super lab is no more. Mm-hmm. And I know the cops and everything crawl all over it and find everything with the super lab. But I don't know if there's a bunch of bones coming up to the surface.
Buried them deep. This is Gustavo we're talking about. 6 feet? No, sir. 36 feet.
Yeah, maybe he's minimum. Maybe he's like sprinkled under there as bone powder. God. I can see Gus doing something like that.
The Spice Girls.
Oh.
Lalo is the Spice. Oh, no. Spice is Lalo's life.
No, I hope not. What does Lyle have to say about that? All right. Steve says Lalo showed some surprising humanity in not shooting Margarita. I expected Lalo to double tap her in the head as she entered the library, and she has to know she didn't open that window so that someone was intruding in her house. Does she think it was Lalo? Who knows? Yes. And that's like, I guess one of the redeeming qualities of Lalo, right, is that he's not killing everybody indiscriminately. He's killing the people he needs to kill.
He's not killing everybody, right. Just some of the buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it much less, what's the word?
Charitably.
He just didn't want to leave a trail. He had shit to do still. He wanted to get his shit done and not have German cops coming after him.
True. He does put himself in a lot hotter water if he does that.
Yeah. Whereas in the middle of the woods, you can chop a guy's foot off and nobody, who's going to know?
No one. I've seen Dark. All right. Charlie says, I'm sure others have mentioned it already, but Gus's freak out in episode 5. You remember the thing where he's like talking about the Spice Girls and he walks out into the parking lot and he's looking around. No one's there.
Yeah. Spidey senses.
Is him making the connection that Lalo is in Germany? He mentions the Spice Girls to the customer.
I saw something about this.
Spice Girls that he introduced at Madrigal and figures out where he must be. That makes sense.
It makes sense. It feels very tenuous to me.
It's like very subtle. It's incredibly subtle. I did not notice it.
Yeah. I can see it now that it has been pointed out to me.
Yeah.
Still feels a little bit crazy to me. But sure, I guess he has the kind of mind that could make that leap.
I suppose. Like, he's just been, his mind's probably been running over and over and over. Like, where is my loose end? Where is the thread that he's going to pull on that's going to unravel my entire operation?
Mm-hmm.
And he just hadn't thought about the Spice Girls. He hadn't thought about the super lab and the Madrigal and all that.
Well, it's not like he knows about the gift that the boys sent to Ziegler's widow.
No, but he knows those guys are out there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're out there to be spoken to if
they live
somehow
still.
Lalo can connect those dots.
And they are the loose ends.
Yeah, and Ziegler's wife, because he knows he spoke to Ziegler at some point and like that whole thing went bad. So it does make sense.
It does.
All right. Josh H. says, it looks like Francesca got her say in regard to decorating Saul's office. But we know that during the Breaking Bad timeline, Saul's office looks very, very different. The change is so drastic that it seems unlikely that the new decor is due solely to Saul's creativity or personal taste. Does that mean there's some sort of firebomb or shoot 'em up that happens at Saul's office? Is there going to be some sort of violent event that requires a full remodel? I don't know. I feel like, I wonder if it's Kim, because Kim's been advising him on a lot of things.
Yeah.
I wonder if Kim comes in and like, this is all wrong for your clientele. Or Francesca's just like, you know, I try to do a good thing here. Screw it. Here's what I think you need. Here's what I think these people deserve.
Right. Yeah. We need to know whose fault it is.
Yeah.
That it changes. It was interesting to me. I feel like his office felt a lot smaller in Breaking Bad than it does in this episode. I don't know if that's just because of the darkness of the walls or maybe just the angle that they were shooting him at, because we mostly just saw him at his desk.
Well, let's also remember he puts a bunch of columns behind him and a concave thing that's going to take up a good chunk of the room. So I think maybe it is a smaller room because he's built
it out.
All this facade.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're right. It does look a lot bigger. I felt that too.
Gotcha.
All right. Navarre from Montana says, hello. I've been seeing a lot of complaining about the slow burn of these last episodes online. In fact, I'm sure you guys will be a little bit upset about another setup episode. However, I'd like to point your attention to some previous Bald Move critiques. Oh boy, you're throwing my own words in my face.
How dare.
I can't stand for this. I can't.
You're sitting.
But I did choose to read this. All right. Breaking Bad. Jim and Aaron seem to be dragged down with season 5A, saying, we aren't sure we need this. We need this after such a solid ending after season 4. And then boom, half a season later, one of the greatest shows ever made. Sure. I was a bit iffy going out. I wanted the show to go out on a high note. Turns out it could hit two high notes.
Wow.
I didn't even know.
What range?
Mr. Robot season 2. There was some doubt. Slow season 4 first half.
Boy, really.
Boom, half season later, another all-time great. Even your very own admittance on the first episode of this season and podcast, you said you had a brand new appreciation for this show after binging it. And that's true. I did. I do feel like this season is fundamentally different, though. They're doing a long con, which we've never seen them do before.
Yeah, not this long.
Not even close to this long. It's like two episodes, maybe.
Yeah.
Most often, it's one episode and done.
Even the stuff with Chuck, that was all one episode, basically.
Every stage of it
from
was.
From hiring Huel to do the drop and everything. Yeah, that was all one episode.
Oh, yeah, chicanery stuff.
Right, exactly.
For sure. Says, I can totally understand the impatience, but remember this team has pulled it off before. And I believe they have earned our trust in being able to do it again.
Absolutely.
Yes. And that's why, you know, I'm not too upset. But I don't know. When you combine, it's tough. Because I did admittedly miss a couple of things this season that would connect some dots and make some scenes work even better. But those very slow cold opens with a bunch of setup episodes made me feel like the show was dragging its feet. Stylistically
feels a little indulgent. Yeah,
right. And this is a different episode. This is a setup episode for sure, but when you're doing so much character work, I don't mind that.
Yeah. Did we, oh man, I don't even know if, yeah, we did, we mentioned that this was directed by Gus.
Giancarlo Esposito. I have no idea how to say it.
I don't either. That just feels so wrong to me. Right. What little knowledge I have of the Spanish language.
Next up is Robert RR. Says, do you think Jimmy knows about Kim and her mother and how they used to scam people? I don't think so.
I bet Kim has never talked about her childhood to anybody. She doesn't even have pictures in her apartment of any of her family or friends or anything.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, the only thing that we've got an insight into is when she talks to Schweikert. I think that one time when they're interviewing her.
The one time she says she's from a tiny town, the border.
Yeah, and there was no future there, and so she left.
Yeah.
That's like all the insight we had, except for these two flashbacks.
Yep.
So, I don't think either of them ask many questions about their pasts.
Yeah.
Like, she probably doesn't know a ton about Chuck and Jimmy's past either.
Probably not. Just what little... Jimmy has told her. Jimmy does have moments where he can't shut up about stuff every once in a while. So I feel like she may know a little bit more about his childhood than he knows about hers. I would say he knows next to nothing about hers.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jim writes in and says, amazing podcast. You guys are both incredible, awesome podcast hosts. And this is my favorite show.
Oh, it's Jim Jones. I see.
No.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. No, another Jim writes in and says, hey guys, I meant to email in last week, but simply ran out of time. In Black and Blue, after Cliff confronts Howard, we get that great close-up shot of Howard's namaste plate. One thing I noticed was the expiration date on the plate is December 2005. I'm not sure how New Mexico operates, but most states make you renew your registration every year. Mm-hmm. If that's true in New Mexico, then we know this season is taking place sometime in 2005. This is 1 year later than resident lawyer Doug suggests, but 3 years on a class action suit still isn't that long. I digress. We know Breaking Bad season one takes place in September of 2008. So that means there is nearly 3 years that needs to be covered or explained in 7 more episodes. My thought is that in the next episode, we will finally see what turns Jimmy into the Saul we know in Breaking Bad, the one that tells Jesse and Walt to kill Badger, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, I think we will pick up the latter half of the season a year or two, maybe even three in the future, maybe with a classic Better Call Saul montage explaining the time lapse. How else do you think they can fit nearly 3 years and half a season?
Do they even need to?
That was kind of my thought, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they do.
I don't know that we need to be brought right up to the moment that Breaking Bad begins. I think we can make some logical leaps and say this is where we leave these characters. They're going to be just living their normal lives up until Walt breaks bad.
And that's the key, right? They need to settle all business.
Yeah.
And put them in places where we believe they could just keep on a treadmill
exactly.
for 3 years
the
until
grind.
Walt
happens.
Put them
happens. On their grind. Yep.
Yeah. So I'm cool with that. I think it's going to be really hard to do that with Gus. Like really, really hard because he's in the middle of a cartel war still in Breaking Bad. Like when we pick up with him, he's executing Juan Bolsa, or having the authorities raid Juan Bolsa and kill him. Like that's a hard thing to put on a back burner for 3 years.
Well, that kind of throws a monkey wrench into your idea that Gus's stuff is going to be wrapped up in the next episode.
Yeah.
If they have stuff to explain, then they might still be having to go back and forth.
I think Lala will be dealt with.
Yeah.
In the next episode.
I think I'm with you on that one.
But Gus will still have to get into place for Breaking Bad. We need to deal with the fallout of Nacho's stuff because I don't believe that Hector is content with where things are
at. Yeah, that's the thing. Even if he takes care of Lalo in the next episode, Hector is still a factor and he still has everyone that can work for him.
Right. You got the cousins. You got people.
Still have the doubt with Juan Bolsa.
I don't know. I really don't think they need to deal with 3 years, but they do need to get the pieces in place.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. James writes in and says, I wrote an email a few weeks ago that was likely long and disjointed as I was writing in bits while at work. Anyway, I was talking about embracing the slow pace and overindulgence of Better Call Saul. Here we go. However, after these last three episodes, I need to walk that back a bit. There's a fine line between dramatic tension and confusion or frustration. I feel that Better Call Saul has passed the threshold here. I don't quite understand why they aren't cluing us in more on the plot to get Howard. Like, all of the initial scams were meant to put Howard on alert and hire a PI. Okay, so they wanted to get caught all along. Why not advance the plot sooner by telling us this and then doing those things off camera? It's like, oh, so when I worried about Jimmy getting caught, he wanted to be caught, but not caught yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also an issue here where the entire plan revolves too much around Howard's reactions, so it seems a bit contrived to me. Like, oh, so you needed him to hire a PI, and you needed this PI to catch you doing one specific thing. That's super convenient that exactly all of those things happened.
They did mention that the timing had to be perfect early on. The timing had to be perfect. It had to be a slow burn. And everything had to be just right. So
You're right.
They kind of warned us beforehand, I feel.
True.
That
true.
It was going to be a little bit of a slow burn right up until it isn't.
I mean, it sounds like me and James both have little hitches with this plan, right? With the judge happening to show up
the
judge
exact
thing same place.
Is maybe my least favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah, so I understand not having this not sit right with you, for sure.
Absolutely.
Because it is. Like, a lot of these things need to happen exactly so. Otherwise, it doesn't go off at all, or they end up in trouble. So you're right about that. It is all a bit contrived, but I think if the payoff is good enough, I'm going to forgive all that.
Absolutely. I'm weak. I'm already half forgiving them.
Right. Like I said, you know, next episode they could come out with, oh, the PI was hired by Kim and Jimmy and they and tell us everything we need to know that answers all those questions. We'll see. I don't really expect that to happen, but if it does, it would make everything a lot easier to swallow.
Yeah, that's fair.
Then Norm also has some issues with another setup episode. He says, another setup episode? I don't think I could take it. All this makes me think, how does this all make sense? That little vignette to start showing Kim getting away with a slap on the wrist doesn't take away 5 seasons of her playing by the rules and her giving up on this opportunity provided by Clifford Maine. It doesn't ring true, and the longer we delay things, the more that sets in. Mr. H.O. Ward doesn't deserve this, and the more the buildup, the more it can't work. And on top of that, I can't get over how Mike seemed to sense that Gus had some moral code or was different than other criminals in Breaking Bad, but there's no way he can think he's anything else but a calculating killer after what we see in Better Call Saul. Thankfully, the Better Call Saul Brain Trust has a track record of making this sort of thing work, so I'm hopeful in the short term, but I'm extremely dubious in the long term. I hope I won't dread a Breaking Bad rewatch. Well, let me say right now, there's nothing they can do in this show to take away from Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad is excellent.
It's its own thing.
It can be viewed as its own thing. I never think the prequels or sequels can destroy the original thing.
Yeah.
It's why I still like Star Wars.
Right? Yeah. It's why we all still like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Sorry. I know that is a controversial statement. The younger people appreciate the prequels.
Sure. Yeah, the prequels are the prequels. I think
it's just
exactly
Gen X
one
and above
of those prequels.
That are
still
salty.
I'll let you decide which one.
You like one of the prequels?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you can't let you have to tell me which one.
You can take your guesses right to BCS at baldmove.com.
Which this completely unrelated
does Jim love? And I didn't say love. Let's set the record straight. I accidentally said love there. Like. To tolerate? Tolerate. Anyway,
are there any of them that don't have Jar Jar Binks?
Yep. Uh-oh.
As a major character, yes, I think so.
That's true. Anyway, so yeah, I get where you're coming from, right? They are adding to characters' legacies, and I think the more you add to a character, the more you risk confusing that character,
or breaking the canon. Yeah.
So I get it.
Dude, it does kind of feel like we're walking that line a tiny bit with Gus sometimes.
Yeah.
Like you were mentioning before, the relationship between Gus and Mike. He's doing a lot of cold-hearted, cutthroat stuff, and Mike is still standing by him here.
It's exactly what Norm's saying. Like, you can't have Mike be shocked too much by the box cutter episode.
Yeah.
Although it might be different, right? I don't think we've ever seen Gus really take out his own guys. And that could be still the context we need to understand, okay, this is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is Mike seeing Gus
at
do something
ruthless.
That is uncalled for.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's risky for sure. And then finally, Therapist Tom from Atlanta says, my friends, it's been a minute since I wrote, but I read my friends like Zoidberg. I've been watching too much Futurama.
Friends.
It's been a minute.
Wait, let me prince. I'm waving my fingers in front of my face.
It's been a minute since I wrote in, but it's your resident therapist, Tom from Atlanta. I've been wanting to do a full case study on Kim for a while, and this flashback gives me a nice excuse to do so.
Nice.
So I'll try to be short, since my emails are historically way too long. You failed, Tom. I'm sorry to say. But it's good, because it is a very interesting email. And I, after having sort of come to this realization last night on the stream and then reading your email, I'm like, yes, yes, somebody gets it. And now I finally get Kim. He says, the best way I can currently conceptualize Kim is through a lens called Adult Children of Alcoholics, or ACOA for short.
Mm.
What that actually means is a child grew up in an alcoholic or chaotic home will often exhibit specific traits as an adult due to this upbringing. I actually suspected Kim of being one of these before we got to the first flashback of her childhood. One of the number of traits you often see in these people is an incredibly complicated relationship with others who exhibit similarly chaotic traits as their parents. The ACOA is consistently frustrated at these people for their impulsivity, lack of responsibility, and for putting themselves in dangerous situations. However, they also find themselves being drawn to these individuals as well. Theoretical motivations for this include attempting to fix their parents in ways they couldn't as a child, attempting to save a younger version of themselves, their comfortability in chaos despite hating it, the desire for approval from a makeshift caregiver, and a strong desire to be loved in ways their caregiver didn't have the space for, and a deep need for control. Yeah. ACOAs will generally fall into one of two categories, repeating the patterns of their parents, i.e. becoming addicts themselves, or becoming overly responsible but finding themselves still fraternizing with chaotic individuals. Kim is most certainly the latter.
An overcorrector, yeah.
Yeah. And then he lists a bunch of characteristics of ACOAs that he thinks apply to Kim. Lying when it would be easy to tell the truth, or just as easy to tell the truth. Take themselves very seriously. Constantly seek approval and affirmation. Are super responsible or super irresponsible. Okay. Are extremely loyal, even in the face of evidence that the loyalty is undeserved.
Yeah.
Like her marrying Jimmy after he betrayed her.
Right.
Becoming approval seekers, being terrified of personal criticism, which is a more subtle one, but almost every time someone has criticized Kim or Jimmy, she shows very strong defense mechanisms and goes on the offense.
Yeah.
That's true.
Especially
she did that with Chuck. She did that with Lalo. She did that
say, with Jimmy, especially. She overreacts. Totally.
Becoming alcoholics, marrying them, or both. Having an overwhelming sense of responsibility. Being concerned more with others than themselves. Her pro bono work.
Mm-hmm.
Become addicted to excitement. Love people who need rescuing. Jimmy, you're always down.
Yeah.
Stuff their feelings. Judge themselves harshly, become terrified of abandonment, become para-alcoholics, that is, people who take on the characteristics of the disease without drinking.
Hmm.
All this is to say, it seems like pre-Jimmy, Kim had leaned hard into the responsibility route. She was buttoned up, controlled, and responsible. Now that Jimmy, a chaotic parent figure, has entered her orbit, she has sunk further and further into old behaviors of enabling and attention-seeking and a desire for the acceptance, love, belonging, and approval that she did not get as a child. Yeah, man, that sounds exactly like Kim. And when you look at her through that lens of everything we've seen of her in this series, I think that's it. That's it.
Yeah, it's sad. But yeah, I think you're right.
And a lot of that stuff that you're talking about is manifesting as completely illogical, right? Irrational behavior.
Right. On the surface.
On the surface. But when you look at her past, and you see how she was raised, and you know how people might react to that sort of thing.
Yeah, you realize that she has this lens that you didn't know about.
Yeah.
That is coloring everything.
Like National Treasure. It's on the back of the Declaration of Independence.
Don't even talk to me about those friggin' glasses. This is relevant to nobody. This is relevant to nobody, but now I'm going to have to say it. Fiddle with the lenses. Whenever you see that something has like six different lenses, try out different combinations immediately.
Right.
Immediately.
We just did this podcast, so people, it's relevant.
Okay.
It's still
did
relevant.
Did you complain about this?
I did.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being my white knight.
But that's it. Yeah, I want to thank everybody who wrote in.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
A lot of good emails there. A lot of good conversation to be had, especially about Kim, mm-hmm. as we round into the final episode of this chunk, the first half of the last season of the prequel before the show that everybody loves.
The show that broke television. Yeah.
Yeah.
Forever.
Mm-hmm. Blasted it wide open.
Hell
like
yeah.
A super lab with the bones of Lalo underneath.
Spice Girls.
All right. Yeah, we'll be back, obviously, for next week's episode. We just decided not to do it. We're going to stop here.
Yeah. We're going to stop here. Here is where we're going to stop. Mm-hmm. Oh, perfect.
No, yeah. we'll be back next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
See ya.